What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese, please.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Rockfin, YouTube, or Odyssey, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, we certainly do appreciate your attention. We know you have a million options out there. And we couldn't do it without the amazing support of our sponsors. C60 Purple Power has been a newer sponsor. Ken Shorts has come on to the show to explain what it's all about. It's an amazing product. I've been taking it for a couple months now, and I've been very vocal about the response I've had, not just with myself, but with my animals. What it is C60 is a naturally occurring molecule. It's comprised of 60 carbon atoms forming something that looks kind of like a hollow soccer ball. It was theorized by Buckminster Fuller back in the 60s and 70s. It was finally actually discovered in the late 80s, and the scientist that discovered it won the Nobel Prize for it. It is the most powerful antioxidant known, hundreds of times more powerful than anything on the market. It helps to maximize the efficiency of the cells in producing energy, but it may also provide cellular protection against many toxic environmental factors. That's how Ken Schwartz found out about it. He's a nuclear physicist, wanted something to help him help protect his cells while he's working around this radiation. And everyone said this C60 stuff works. It works so well for him that it cured his macular degeneration, and he wound up starting a company to sell it. So go to c60purplepower.com, use the promo code macro, and save yourself some money and check it out. See if it's right for you. Well, these days, to say that we are living in a world of censorship would be a gigantic understatement. And there are some companies out there that recognize this, that are doing things proactively to try and get around that. And I was at an Acapulco in 2020 speaking, and when I wasn't speaking, I had a friend of mine, Johnny Dollar, who's a crypto artist, say to me, "Hey, you know about Library?" And I said, "Yeah, I've heard about it, but I don't really know much about it." "Oh, well, the CEO is going to be speaking over at the other stage. Come with me." So he took me over there. I sat with him, and we got a chance to listen to Jeremy Kaufman, CEO and founder of Library, give a pretty great presentation. And I left there going, "Okay, well, it looks like I need to sign up." Jeremy, how you doing, man? Good to see you again.
I am doing great. Not here under ideal circumstances,
right?
But truthfully, I'd take the circumstances of today over where we were a couple of years ago, because Odyssey and Library have been just absolutely blowing up. And I did hear you're on a number of platforms. I think that's great. I'm all for being diverse. But I would encourage anyone who hasn't tried Odyssey yet, if you're not on Odyssey yet, this is a great chance to come and try it out. Odyssey.com. We think it's the successor to YouTube, and we can get into why we think that it has to do with the library technology that's underneath it. But it's just a really easy way to watch videos with much better policy, and you even earn a little bit of cryptocurrency while you're doing it. So if anyone hasn't checked it out yet, I would encourage people to come try it.
For sure. And as a content creator, you guys have the, I've been talking about this for a while. You have the smartest thing ever. It's when you set up an account with Odyssey and you already have an account with YouTube and you think, God, I'm going to have to upload 200 videos to this platform. Do I really want to do that? No. There's a little button that says, would you like to import all of your videos from YouTube? And you click yes. And it says, great. Well, we'll send you an email in a couple of days when it's all done. And you're like, am I done? I'm done. That's all I have to do. It's the greatest thing ever for guys. Now, most people that are watching are, you know, they're not going to know about that or care one way or the other. But I'll tell you what, the content creators certainly do appreciate that little feature that you put in there. You saved us all a whole lot of time.
Well, thank you very much. And we try to do everything that way. You know, I'm a very product focused CEO. I care a lot about making software that's genuinely like easy and enjoyable to use. And I think that's why, especially in the blockchain space where that's not always the case, I'm very excited about the space generally, but you know, I think we have really solved a lot of the usability issues. And I think it's resulted in one of the most secretly most used blockchains out there because we've made it so easy.
Yeah, it's huge. It's definitely blowing up. But with blowing up comes additional problems. You tend to put a target on yourself when you're doing a little too well. And of course, we, you know, if you listen, if we're both speaking at Anarchapulco, we obviously have our thoughts about how the government should and shouldn't be. So when you make yourself into a really pioneering technology company that challenges the establishment, that challenges YouTube and people like that, you probably have to expect that there's going to be some blowback. So you guys have been in the news a little bit lately. I know there's probably some limitations as to what you can discuss about an ongoing situation, but to the best of your ability at this moment, tell us what's going on with the fight between library and the Securities and Exchange Commission.
Yeah, and I can talk about that a decent amount. I finally get to. I'm someone who is, anyone who's paid attention to our company knows, we try really hard to be transparent. We put everything, you know, front and center, not hiding things. I think it may have gotten us a little bit of trouble in this case. Although, also, I want to say before I talk about the case, no threat to the network, no threat to anyone's cryptocurrency, no threat to anyone's channels. This is about the SEC trying to sort of damage the company that's behind this technology. But the beautiful part of it is the way that we've built it, these kinds of, it's not vulnerable the same way that a traditional sort of video site would be. So the things that, you know, they could just, the corporate vehicle could go away and it'd be annoying because we've got, you know, we've got some cash and some cryptocurrency that they're trying to get. But the sort of fundamental value is not at threat. But what's happening is, what I think is the bigger threat is that under the standard that's being advanced in this case, practically every cryptocurrency would be a security, which means that it would have to be heavily regulated. Every exchange, you know, no matter how small, you give someone 50 cents worth of cryptocurrency. Oh, well, you know, did you fill out all your paperwork? Did you do that in a legal way? Did that person have a license to facilitate the exchange of your 50 cents? You know, and this is what I think is really going on. I actually think this is less about us. Maybe it's about what we're doing. Maybe we sort of poked the wrong companies in the eye and it's some sort of backdoor thing. I'm not ruling that out. But I think it's actually much more about the cryptocurrency space in general. And I think it's about setting a standard under which the standard they're advancing here, and this is why it's so dangerous, is basically if your cryptocurrency is actively developed and the person developing the token has some of it and they sell some of the token, person or entity, then it's a security. Doesn't matter if you're in the US, it doesn't matter how you got the token, it doesn't matter how functional and usable the thing is, you can't simultaneously improve the technology and do anything with the token. And of course, technology never stops improving. So effectively, they're saying you can never use the cryptocurrency, no matter how you've obtained it. And so I think it's a really dangerous precedent. We have a case at Help LBRY. We have a website at helplbrysafecrypto.com. There's a video explaining the case. All of the materials are there. We've published the complaint from the SEC. So you can really, if you want to dig in through it all, we are again being very transparent about this because the SEC has really been a bad faith actor in this case. And I think they're going to come out looking really bad.
Yeah. Well, they have gone after Ripple. They did that earlier. They made a big deal about that. It seems like whenever there's a legitimate threat to the established power structure, and I think people see cryptocurrency as at least having the potential to be a threat to it, they're not going to be quite as welcoming. They're going to see you as some sort of enemy. We know that there is nothing that is out of bounds for them to do as far as trying to tie you up in lawfare and drain your bank account and make you focus all your time and effort on fighting a lawsuit as opposed to growing your business. So to say they're bad faith actors, I think would be understood by most people and maybe even an understatement for a lot of us. But where do things stand with this? It sounds like, you guys are not saying you're not open to some sort of settlement with them, right? I mean, that's a possibility.
I said this on an interview earlier today and it already got clipped, so I'll say it again. It's just like, I'll pay them several million dollars if they can simply tell me how we can continue to build this technology legally. Now, I don't think we did anything wrong, but I just want to be able to do the work. I'm an engineer. Almost everyone at the company is an engineer. We're builders. We are, enthralled by the possibility of what can be built here. And we just want to build it. Like, just tell us any way that we can keep doing the work. That's all we want. We did what you're supposed to do. We hired the, $500,000 an hour lawyers and got all the memos written, and then attempted to follow them. And they're saying that's not enough. And so it's like, well, what's enough? You've got to tell us. So yeah, we're very open-minded. We're not trying to be, my ideology is, if there's no victim, it should be allowed, So, and again, there's no victim in this case. It's another point I'll make. There's no one has alleged that we've done anything wrong. No one went to the SEC and said, your library defrauded me, library tricked me. They're not even alleging fraud. They're not going after us personally. I'm pragmatic in terms of a willingness to find some way of working this out, but I'm not going to give them a bunch of money and then, except that the token needs to be heavily restricted in the US.
So was there a problem? If I read this correctly in some of the articles, it said that if there was any sort of expectation of the token increasing in value, that made it part of a commodity.
Yeah, that's sort of the key test, but it depends on how aggressively it gets into it. So it's basically if people are buying the token expecting to make profits off of the efforts of others. But it also gets into how it's been promoted. It gets into whether or not there is a common enterprise, because people buy things expecting it to increase in value all of the time. They buy antiques, they buy collectible cards, they buy baseball cards, they buy all kinds of things. They buy commodities, it gets pretty complex. And so what we're dealing with here is a 100-year-old law, that's sort of like, now that's not clear in any way how it applies to cryptocurrency. They've refused to offer any guidance. They've refused to clarify their stances. They refuse to make positive statements about what is and is not allowed. So they'll say something like, if you're decentralized enough, what does that mean? We think we're decentralized. What's the standard you're applying to judge if something is decentralized? They're not going to tell you. Right. We started writing our own proposed rules. We're like, okay, like we'll do this. Like, is this good? They won't even answer the questions. So it's like, there's no ability to, it's been really frustrating to me. I didn't have the highest opinion of government necessarily going into this, but like, it's been like psychopathic. Like they knew that we were guilty from day one. We're good people. We're entrepreneurs. We're trying to build something. And it's just, they have just tried to destroy us. And it's been very, I'm a fighter. So I'm like not letting it get me down too much, but it is, that ideal that some people have that America is this place that's going to like encourage innovation and this kind of thing, it is not happening here. They've made every effort to protect the status quo, protect Wall Street, you know, protect big tech.
Yeah, is that what this is? It smells like it's a protection, like this is the protection racket going around and saying, listen, cryptocurrency in general is making banking, central banking in particular, very nervous. They don't maybe understand it. They want to run their own scam with some digital dollar or some sort of digital SDR, some horseshit like that. But are you just the first in a long line of potential future victims that they go after because you are considered a threat to the establishment?
Yeah, I think we're definitely the first line in potential victims. As to how much there is, you know, sort of backdoor maneuvering, there's sort of being two possible scenarios, and maybe it's a continuum between them. You know, one is that it is this kind of thing. Like, I do find it suspicious that the case was open for 3 years. The facts weren't really in dispute, and they're charging us for a case they could have brought by the end of 2018. And they waited until, you know, libraries blowing up, has 20 million people a month using it, and then that's when the case drops. You know, when big tech, when, you know, YouTube and so on is starting to feel the heat, and that's when it comes. Definitely, there's a part of me that goes, "Well, that's a little weird." The more innocent explanation is simply that we made it very easy. We have been very transparent. We're super forthright. We have logs of every, you know, transaction we've ever made that people can access and download, and we talk about it. And so, you know, if you're a lazy regulator who thinks everything is under your purview, you know, the SEC's position is basically that every cryptocurrency is a security. Well, maybe you don't want to work so hard. And rather than try to find the bad actors, you just go after the actor that, you know, is just, you could shoot them like fish in a barrel. Yeah. And so I think that it's one end or both of those things.
I remember when I lived in California, I got a letter that said, I was living in Las Vegas. I hadn't lived in California for many years. And I got a letter in Las Vegas saying, you owe back taxes in California for something. And I took it to my CPA and I said, what is this? I don't owe back taxes for anything back there. And he goes, oh, they just send that out to everybody and see who pays. And I was like, what? So I mean, that's like, well, let's just rattle everybody's cages that's dealing in crypto and see who rolls over and plays dead or gives us what they want. I mean, are they just sort of rattling your cage to see what happens?
Maybe. I mean, we definitely think it's possible, and especially as I think we continue to, you know, sort of make some noise about this, that they decide, hey, maybe we made a mistake here. You know, maybe this wasn't the right company to go after. And we certainly hope that, that happens. I mean, I agree with the phenomenon that you're talking about. Someone replied with the tweet to us today where it's like, how taxes work. It's like, well, first you have to guess how much money you owe the government. And if you guess wrong, you go to jail or you get a penalty. And if you guess high, you know, they just keep it. You know, it's definitely right. a sort of, they win no matter what. It's not a very fair system.
Is there a way? I'm sure there is a way. I know there's a way that people can support you and get the word out to everyone, to, because this is whether you're currently using Library and to be clear, Library parent company Odyssey is the video streaming service. So
yeah, Library parent company, and also the name of the underlying decentralized technology. So Library does to publishing what Bitcoin does to money. Library Inc. created that technology, and Odyssey is the easiest way to use it. Same way that like Coinbase might be the easiest way to get Bitcoin.
Gotcha. Okay. And in a way that people can follow this case and follow and support you guys and help you out?
Yeah. So we have a website with more details about the case. There's also a petition on there, and it is great if you could take those 10 seconds to sign the petition. It's super quick, and it will show that there are people who care about this. It'll help us get more interest from politicians, help us continue to build interest around the case. You know, when 50,000, 100,000 people have said, hey, this is a problem, it really does help create public attention around something. So the petition and all this stuff is at a website called helplbrysavecrypto.com. There's also a video on there with more details about the case and a whole bunch of facts. So we'd really like people to sign the petition. The other really big thing you can do, and this is there's even more self-interest reasons to do this one, is just use the thing. Go to Odyssey, create that account, create a validated account so you can get free cryptocurrency and spread the word. The more people holding the cryptocurrency, the more people using the technology.
So people certainly should be using the technology for sure. If they're watching this, you should be watching this interview on Odyssey and supporting it and trying it out. There's some of these platforms out there that aren't the best for video. You know, they try to be YouTube. Odyssey works great. I have no complaints with that. And I haven't heard of anybody that has any complaints with uploading time or any sort of censorship issues or anything like that. So these are all many of the reasons to get on there. I mean, people just need to get comfortable with not looking at YouTube as the only possibility.
And another point I'll make in our favor here compared to some of the other sites that people look at. We have a content roster that I think is like really incredible. It's not just the stuff that potentially gets in trouble on YouTube. And I'm supportive. I think YouTube has terrible policies, but you know, it's super mainstream generalist stuff. It's just comedy videos, you know, it's cooking videos. It's might not be right for your audience. It's makeup tutorials, And I think this is where having library as that layer underneath it is so key. You know, it's not just about, from a lot of our audience, most of it, the majority, it's not necessarily about, hey, screw YouTube. It's like, well, you know, you can earn cryptocurrency. You know, you get 100% of your balance. It settles immediately. You don't have to watch all the ads. You know, there's a lot about it that's genuinely better. You don't have someone spying on you and exploiting you, you know? And so there are lots and lots of reasons that aren't just, I'm making content that gets in trouble on YouTube.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the origins of the company, because I think in order for people to really get an idea of what the company is, we got to know why it started, why you felt the need to do something different. I mean, obviously YouTube has been around for a long time. It's the monster, and it's been great for a long time. And then it's been kind of wonky for the last couple of years and authoritarian. What was the impetus for starting Library?
Yeah, well, I'll be honest. Actually, when I first had the idea, I didn't think I was starting a YouTube competitor. Mm-hmm. Maybe in a very abstract sense, I thought that I was. I'm a computer scientist. I have a computer science background, among other things. And I started learning about Bitcoin and blockchain. And I started thinking about what's different about this technology. I also had an entrepreneurial background. What's different about this? What does it enable that couldn't be done before? And to me, fundamentally, a blockchain is actually a database. It's not a new type of money. It kind of needs to have this value and this ability to exchange it to make the database work. But you can do all kinds of things with the database that aren't just money, right? Bitcoin is sort of the simplest thing that you could build. And I love Bitcoin, but it's the simplest thing you can build. It's a database that says, this is the address, this is the balance, and it maintains this in a way that's not owned or controlled by any one party. Mm-hmm. That's what's really cool about it. And so I had a background in sort of peer-to-peer, just as an interested user in peer-to-peer tech and sort of like internet freedom and these kinds of things. And I just couldn't stop thinking about this idea of what if we use the blockchain to maintain this registry of content? You know, who made it? What is it? And you can wed that with a peer-to-peer network, which was already a pretty advanced technology. You know, things like BitTorrent, which has a bad reputation, but is quite powerful technologically, or at least bad reputation in some circles. I couldn't stop thinking about it. And when I can't stop thinking about something, I tend to have to work on it. So we kind of got a small crew together and just kind of started hacking. And we thought of it first. We actually thought the market we were going to go after first was like paid content, paid movies and this kind of thing. And it does work for that. And it is used for that. But we were probably about, I don't know how far in we were, but maybe a year in. Roughly, we just were seeing that YouTube was really what people wanted a better version of. And so we've shifted away from paid content and focused more on user-generated sort of YouTube style content. And we've been on that focus really ever since.
Yeah. And it's a great platform for that. I think a lot of people have fears like, well, am I going to find the videos I'm looking for? Yeah, probably. I mean, there's a ton on there. It's not like just a couple of cooking videos or a couple of makeup tutorials. It's massive. This is a gigantic operation that you're running. And one of the things that I think is nice that as you sort of perfect technology and roll it out slowly, you start to get new features. And you guys just released the live streaming. And I know that in the alternative media community, there was a collective cheer when that happened because it was like, finally, we got it. But of course, we're not trying to rush you. We want you to do it right. Take your time and, you know, do all the things you need to do. But if it was up to us, it'd be like, hurry up. And now it's here. So and introduce live streaming to the world. Now go to Library and find, or go to Odyssey and find that.
That's right. That's right. It's not quite open to everyone, although if you want to get in, you can send me a message. And I think anyone who has more than 500 coins staked on their channel gets in immediately currently. And yeah, look, we started working on live streaming this year. So I think that says something that about the quality of the team here and how fast we can execute on things and how well we can execute on things, because I think some companies have been working on it longer than that, you know, and they don't have it out yet. So we do move pretty fast and build pretty quality software around here.
Well, that's great. How big is the team now, since you mentioned that?
That's a good question, because it gets fuzzy very quickly, because you have these people who are contributors and they might be working part-time. We have 16 people who are, actually, no, we just hired someone. So 17 people working officially for the company full-time or very close to full-time. But then, you know, there are hundreds of people who contributed code in the last year. And so the project is much larger than that. There are 40,000 people in the Discord chat room, you know? So, yeah. And I mean, like even our, you know, like our quote marketing team is like mostly like memes and videos that other people make, you know? And so like a big part of the energy behind it is not just what this core is doing, but it's the whole community. And it's been one of the coolest, powerful, like awe-inspiring, like I'm humbled by all of the contributions that so many people make and the time and energy that they put into making this thing succeed. And it's also incredibly motivating for me to see that, because it shows how much people care about this.
Yeah. And their love of this is really authentic. I mean, they have become evangelical about this. I mean, they're spreading the word in a way that is that you don't really see too often with a lot of companies where, you know, or maybe they want to have fake grassroots, or, hey, we want to pretend like we have a lot of support. That's not going on here. You guys have legitimate, enthusiastic support from your users, not just the content creator, but the people that like it. They like the whole idea of it. They like the idea of this company kind of doing things differently. Yes, it looks, in some ways, it looks similar to YouTube. In fact, you'll know how to navigate it easily. It's very easy to work. But the people that know about you know that when you peel the hood back, it's way different on the inside, not just in the technology, but different on the inside as far as the people that are running it. And that matters, because let me be honest, Susan Wojcicki is not on a lot of people's nice list, and they could really do without her. I think they would rather swap you out for her. Where is, how's the financing going? You guys funded really heavily. Are you backed? You're going to be around for a while?
We are well capitalized currently. We've actually avoided putting more money into the corporate vehicle currently because of the exposure and liability from the ongoing case. So we're well funded to get all the way through the case, well funded enough to cover probably a year and a half, 2 years of work. But we're trying to not put too much money in, just in case you end up losing, you know, they can wipe out everything, right? So we also have relationships where there's ways that, you know, sort of like money on standby. If they destroy the entire corporate vehicle, what we'd probably do is end up spinning up a new corporate vehicle, because all the software is open source, right? So we're not really privileged. Any new company could pick things up and sort of pick up exactly where things are. And so we both have enough money to continue the work and get through the case. And then in that worst case scenario, sort of also prepared to not really miss a beat.
Okay. Let's say that the case gets dropped or you guys settle or whatever. The SEC comes to their senses and they realize they're just being jerks about this. That's behind you. Where are you guys going in the future? What's the next couple of years look like for this? Because this seems like it has massive implications to not just get bigger as a platform, but it seems like it's built on top of something that is really scalable and could be used for a variety of different ideas.
Yep. Well, first got to get to 100 million people, and then you got to get to a billion people. This is something that I think can be an absolutely foundational technology. Can be something that's 20, 30, 40% of internet traffic. Like, there's no reason to not publish things on Library. You're just missing out on distribution. If you're selling content, you get 100% of the price, and it's super easy, and it's all open. And there's the bad things that happen via the status quo are like literally impossible to happen here because of the design of the openness and the fact that you're not trapped in that same way. Like we basically have handcuffed ourselves in our ability to do the kind of classic Silicon Valley exploitation where you build a great product and then you handicap your own product to make more money off of it, right? We can't do that. So there's, I don't see how, sort of what outcompetes this. I guess, someone could try to copy what we're doing and somehow beat us. I don't know. But like, it's not going to be YouTube. They're not going to surrender all of their control. They're not going to give everything up. I just don't see it happening. So I think that this technology will be very, very big. I mean, it already is very big. So, but I added some varies. We might do new, it does work for other things. Like we do it technically from a technical perspective, Library doesn't care whether it's a video or other things. Like the apps care because your app has to be tailored experience wise, but we're looking at things like going into news spaces, going into other spaces. But the core will definitely be the existing sort of product of Odyssey. Like the number one focus is still just continuing to make that better. And this can also be a boring answer, but like something like the file page, that main page, the main video page, we've probably redesigned that page or at least tweaked that page 200 times, right? Mm-hmm. And we're going to tweak it 500 more times because the page that's getting loaded 3 million, 5 million, 10 million times a day is so important, right? And so you want to just keep iterating on the core stuff, keep making video delivery happen even faster and more reliable and all of these things. So that's not always the sexiest answer, but that is a big part of what we do. I'll give one feature that's around the corner that's not out yet is playlists. So playlists are about to come out.
Cool. What has been the response from the phone, Google's and Apple, iTunes and things like that?
Apple stinks. I mean, they make good software, but their policies are terrible. We can't really do anything with the cryptocurrency in the iOS ecosystem. So a bunch of that had to be disabled. This was like kind of a hack, but like we basically had to disable COVID-related search terms to get onto iOS because they don't want, can't question the status quo. That's another thing that's been so crazy with all the censorship stuff where it's like the standard for being a doctor is lower than the standard to publish videos, right? Like these people aren't losing their licenses, but they're denied distribution by like a tech company. It's like, what the hell do you know that you're saying a doctor isn't allowed to talk to people? And that's even, I don't care if I agree or not. It's just like, in what world are tech companies censoring doctors? I don't get it. Like it'd be one thing, maybe if they were like their licenses were taken away and stuff like that, but that's not even happening. So Apple, I think, is, I don't like it. I don't like the iOS system ecosystem there. We did get into it with Google over our app once. They took it out of the App Store for 2 days. That's another one where just like with the SEC, I'm like, is this completely inept bureaucracy or, is this an attempt to screw with us? I do generally believe that saying, that you should attribute things to like ignorance before malice or whoever it goes. Yeah. But I think they're going to continue to try to sort of mess with us there. We're safe on Android though. Android, you can load apps, you can install apps. The apps can be self-updating. So I'm not too worried. The only one is really is Apple. If they decide on iOS specifically to block distribution, it's really hard. Cause if you're on iOS, you're like, your phone's locked down. It's owned by Apple. Basically you're renting it, you know? So everywhere else we're fine. You know, they can't, if you're on desktop, they can't do anything. If you're on Android, you know, you're pretty safe. So.
Well, I was talking to Whitney Webb, who's an investigative journalist, and she has her stuff on Patreon as well as on other platforms. And she said she got kicked off of Patreon. And the reason they gave her, they said, well, we want you to take down your COVID-related stuff. And she said, I'm not going to. And they said, well, we want you to take it off of your website, not just off Patreon, but off of your website. And she's like, what? And the reason that they gave her was that her information and her reports were too convincing that you should have some vaccine hesitancy, and that they didn't like that because so you're saying that the information was too good?
Yeah.
They're like, yes, basically that was it. And so they kicked her off.
It's so crazy to me. I don't know if their model of people is so bad. Like, I'll be honest. I think, cause I know not everyone thinks this, but like, I think the vaccines are safe. But like the way that like public health experts and the government and the corporate press have like worked together to manipulate people for the last year, it's like, no wonder, like it makes me skeptical. The number one thing that makes me skeptical isn't the data around the vaccines or the science. It's the way that they are jamming it down your throat and making it so you're not allowed to disagree. Like, cause that's what makes me go, well, hey, what's going on here?
Right.
Why are they behaving this way? And the fact that these platforms think that they should be able to regulate and control your entire life to be allowed to use them. Twitch announced it today. Twitch said today, as of today, we're going to start considering your behavior off the platform as to whether or not you're allowed to stream here. So your streams can be completely kosher. Mm-hmm. But if you do things elsewhere that Twitch doesn't like, then Twitch is going to deplatform you. And I don't get it, man. I don't know. It's like, why do we want everyone to become a cop? It's like an alien psychology to me. It's like, just let people be. And so we're going to continue to be that way. It's wonderful for my company. Like, I love it from a business success. I don't like it from a where the world is going, right, but from the sense of like my like personal and professional success, I'm like, it's like, I can't go more than a couple of days before they do something. I'm like, what? And then it just brings us another 100,000 users.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I wonder we've heard this lately, and I'm not the most tech savvy guy. So you'll be able to answer this way better than I can, but I know that there are problems with people having their services hosted on particular servers. How's your situation with servers? Are you guys, I would imagine, are you vulnerable? Or are you in a position where you kind of have to be careful, or how's that work?
We're pretty safe. Well, so one, we've got the decentralized network, and so that's very resilient. And then you have the web-based front ends. Those are technically speaking more vulnerable than the decentralized network. But we have, we've been very upfront again with our providers and you know, with what we're doing and all that. So we've received assurances from them. And even in the instance in which the provider changed their mind, because you do have to have some providers, right? Like someone has to provide your DNS, you know, someone has to provide these services. Even in that scenario, we'd be able to spin up very quickly, you know, sort of somewhere else. So there's really no scenario of that parlor type situation where, you know, it's gone for an entire month. I don't think anything is going to happen. And again, this is another reason that we're safe from getting the sort of like, let's say the BitChute treatment. I don't think they deserve it, but the fact that their links are blocked and you can't link BitChute and so on. And I think it's because, you know, BitChute has really become sort of a haven for the content that they don't like. Whereas on Odyssey, there's so much stuff on there. You know, the things that they might object to are, you know, kind of a drop in the bucket rather than the whole thing. And I think that also creates a lot more safety for us.
Yeah. You guys aren't really known as like pirate radio or anything like that. You know, you're not a place for outlaws necessarily. I mean, we post our stuff there because we like your policies and things like that, but you're not like you said, it's, you're not BitChute. I mean, BitChute is known as like, well, if you get kicked off of YouTube, then go to BitChute, you know, but I've never heard anybody frame you guys in a way that, that you're some sort of like outlaws or anything like that. You just seem to be doing, the video platform hosting job better than other people. You seem to have come at it from a much different angle that rewards and certainly promotes privacy, but you're not privacy because there's something nefarious going on.
Exactly. Yeah. I've heard a lot of people say it's like YouTube was a decade ago, you know, kind of like it was in the past, where it was like, it's definitely a bit more freewheeling and you can find weird videos and trippy videos and it's all independent creators rather than the highly corporate kind of content that they're focused on now.
Yeah. Well, since you're in the crypto space, what do you make of this adoption of Bitcoin in particular, but crypto in general, over the last 6 months or so? It seems like it took a couple people. It took Elon Musk or Michael Saylor or some large corporations that say, yeah, I think that holding a portion of our cash reserves in the form of Bitcoin, or I mean, in their case, Bitcoin, but maybe it could be another cryptocurrencies as a hedge against inflation. And it seemed like once they started talking about that, then it got some sort of mainstream credibility. What was that what launched it, or was crypto just waiting to explode?
Well, I'll agree with what many say, that we're still early. You know, there's still not the sort of density of adoption that I think that we'll eventually see. I think one of the biggest things that aided it is what's been going on with, at least in the US, like with the Federal Reserve. There's been so much money printed in the last year. And I mean, I was certainly thinking this, where I was like, well, where should my money be right now? Like, what should I be doing with my money? Because everything's getting more expensive. Everything's about to get more expensive. And so if you're a business with cash on hand, you've got to think, well, what should I be doing with this cash? Because my cash is effectively getting taxed because so much money is being printed. That's what printing money is. It's a tax on everyone who holds whatever the currency is. And so I do think that's a big part of the appeal of blockchain is we now have this tokenization of things where the rules are fixed and, you know, someone can't just arbitrarily, you know, make more whenever they want. And so I think that's probably the most fundamental thing that's driving adoption. I do also agree with, you know, the sort of like Warren Buffett type statement that like, it's not exactly right to think of these as an investment in the sense that like it's traditionally, your investments are like actually producing something. I mean, this is like trying to be in front of a trend. You know, you're predicting that this thing is going to be more valuable in the future, but it's not like it's not actually generating anything. And so I think people should be getting into crypto, but I think the number one reason that people should be getting into crypto is for the like empowerment angle than the investment angle. Like it gives us an ability to have control over our finances again, to have control over our content experiences again, you know, rather than ceding them to these middle parties. The control over the financial system really has become the biggest way that the state exerts control. I don't know if you, like Operation Choke Point under the Obama administration, where they're, you know, shutting down the ability, like basically shutting down banking services and credit card services because people are doing something legal, but that the administration didn't like. And so, you know, cryptocurrency really makes this ability to do that go away. And that's why I think it's such an important technology. And people should get into it because it's empowering and enables new things, you know, not because necessarily you're going to like 10x your whatever. I mean, that might happen. I'm not saying that's impossible. Obviously people do that, but I think that's not like, I think that's actually not the number one reason that you should be getting involved.
Well, if you play craps, you know, there's the pass line that most people bet on, and then there's the don't pass line. And I always look at Bitcoin as betting on the don't pass line, as you're betting against the central banks. And you always get that funny stare if you're at a craps table and somebody bets on the don't pass button, because it's like they're betting against the table. Everyone kind of goes, you prick. Yeah. But in this, when you see inflation sort of whittling away your buying power and things like that, a bet on Bitcoin or a bet on cryptocurrency in general is removing your currency, removing your money from their central banking scheme and putting it into a different world, and using that, as you said, to empower yourself. So we'll wrap up with this. Where is Library in 10 years?
It's like a very, I think it's a foundational part of the internet. I think people who are publishing just about anything will end up having a handle or an identity on the network. I think it'll be used by billions of people. I think it'll be like very big. I don't think that's like 100% certain, but I think that is like a very realistic scenario, especially with all of the trends that we're facing. So I know that's like probably sounds like a kind of like crazy thing to say. It's very ambitious, but I think it's possible.
I think it's possible too. I think that this has this is the sort of technology, the sort of philosophy that a lot of people are connecting with, a lot of people like. I know that, you know, I'm in this alternative media world and we're all into the, I mean, we see this and we go, that's it, we like that. But it's getting the as James Corbett calls it, the normies out there to understand that there are other alternatives out there. That's Jeremy Kaufman, everybody. He is the CEO and founder of Library. The links are going to be in the description. I would encourage you all to get behind this company and support it. This is supporting us. It's supporting free speech. It's supporting the alternative media. It's supporting running things in a much different way. Jeremy, thanks so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thank you. It was great to be here.